It's Monday, October 12th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Glad to have you here for a new week from Normal's West Coast Media Headquarters here in beautiful Portland, Oregon. It's not a typo, it's a way of life. We're getting some help here at the Daily Audio Stash. A lot of you have made notice of the fact that the stashes weren't coming out daily as I was gone out on the road doing one of my three other jobs. But we're going to fix that. We are going to bring you a Daily Audio Stash every day, and we're getting some help to do it. I got a guy named Jack who emailed me from Maryland telling me he had all sorts of skills with Audacity and sound production, and he'd be flattered to edit the post-production work that usually takes me so long to get the stash done. So coming up pretty soon, all I'll have to do is write the stories and record them, and Jack will take care of all the editing and uploading for me. Thanks a lot, Jack. Also, our good friend Cannabis Carrie, who takes care of the news on the Normal Show Live, has jumped in to help with some of the email duties and some of the chapter outreach work that I have to do during the day, so she's helping me get caught up there. It's amazing how we all come together to get the work done here to end adult marijuana prohibition. And as this podcast grows and succeeds, that success will be passed on to everyone who's helping out. So thanks to all of you for helping this work out. Speaking of some of our volunteers, you'll notice that this week and the coming weeks we'll be producing some tunes for our Daily Toker tunes that you may have heard before. That's because Tam from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com has to take this month off as she's getting ready for the 2010 Global Marijuana Music Awards and all those submissions that are coming in. So go ahead, Tam, get that work taken care of so we can have some great new tunes in the next season. We'll play some of the best ofs for this week and the coming weeks. Also, I'm producing some of the audio from our Normal National Conference, which took place last month, September 24th through 26th, at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in San Francisco, California. I've got five of the panels now up on our special events feed. You can find our special events feed by going to stash.normal.org and scrolling down the right-hand sidebar where you'll find the link for special events. I've also got a post up on the stash with handy little audio players for these first five presentations. Click up there now and you'll be able to find the question and answers on the legal panel on small patient collectives in California. We've got the keynote speech from Stephen D'Angelo, the CEO of Harborside Dispensaries, entitled Flick the Switch, a medical path to full legalization. It's a great speech. You'll want to hear it. We've got the Normal Pot and Parenting and Legalization panel featuring Rob and Jessica Corey and Guy O'Belem, Rick Steves, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and George Rohrbacher, all talking about what it's like to raise a child in the era of semi-legal marijuana and being a marijuana activist. Normal's Paul Armentano spoke on Thursday, a speech he called Palliative and Curative Relief Through a Safe and Effective Herbal Medicine. This is about a 1 hour and 15 minute talk where Paul crams in all that amazing knowledge he's got from all the studies that have come out over the past year with regards to medical marijuana. and our panel discussion on larger patient cooperatives and dispensaries, question and answers with some of the best lawyers in canna business all across the West Coast and Colorado. You'll definitely want to check that one out. All five of those available through our special events feed or through the post entitled Audio from Normal Conference 2009, Part 1. More will be coming up as we continue to unpack the audio. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere. Time to look at our cannabis community calendar brought to you at normal.org/calendar. This Thursday, October 15th, Philly Normal is having their open meeting at the A Space. This is at 4722 Baltimore Avenue in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. On Friday, October 16th, the Cannabis Common Sense TV show goes out over Ustream.tv. On Saturday, October 17th, Normal of Waco is having their litter pickup on Texas State Highway number 164. And on Sunday, Philly Normal is involved with AIDS Walk Philadelphia for 2009 at 2600 Benjamin Franklin Parkway in Philadelphia. For information on all of these events, check out normal.org/calendar. It's a normal shout-out. Our shout-out today goes out to everybody. Quite behind on the emails, 2,000 emails to be precise. And a lot of you have been emailing me at stash@normal.org interested in starting a new normal chapter. We're going to get information out to all of you, but please be patient. We're still combing through the emails. Cannabis Carrie's helping out. She's already identified 25 people for me to send emails to regarding starting a new chapter. And as we get through more of the emails, there'll be more notices coming out. It's our goal this fall and winter to install 20 new normal chapters around the country, and we need your help to do it. It's really quite easy. You're just going to be forming your own nonprofit organization and allying with Normal. We've got all the forms, bylaws, and applications that you need. Just send me an email at stash@normal.org. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines, including a look at some letters in the San Francisco Chronicle about the elevators being thick with smoke at the Normal National Conference. I'll give a little debunking on that. A very controversial article or pair of articles have come out called Why I Give My 9-Year-Old Pot, a very interesting look at the use of medical marijuana for children. And New Mexico is still facing distribution problems for their medical marijuana, despite the state making nonprofit dispensaries state-licensed and legal. For our Daily Toker Tunes, we bring you some music from our vaults from The Dirt Ball, my homie from Bend, Oregon, and a tune of his entitled Hate Bait. And then, in our interview segment, we'll be playing the Larger Cooperatives and Dispensaries panel from the Normal National Conference. We're going to give you the first 15 minutes of that, and you can check out the entire recording by visiting the special events feed at stash.normal.org. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Elevators thick with pot smoke, and other lies about normal conference in San Francisco. On September 24th and 25th, Normal held its 38th annual national conference at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in San Francisco. This last Tuesday, the San Francisco Chronicle posts this letter to the editor complaining about the conference. Naturally, it would take a tourist from out of state, not a native San Franciscan or Californian, to complain about the event. But did it have to be somebody from my hometown of Boise, Idaho?
Secondhand dope. I recently brought my mother to your beautiful city to see the play South Pacific, which had been one of her favorite movies. Imagine our surprise when the hotel we stayed at, the Grand Hyatt, had thick marijuana smoke in the lobby, elevators, and area around the hotel, and in our room. The guest in the room next to ours smoked so heavily, my mother felt ill. She had never smelled marijuana and has no desire to ever again. If Normal wants to convince citizens to legalize marijuana, they should start by being respectful of those who do not wish to share in secondhand dope. The bellman told us that the housekeepers and that all the employees who worked during the Normal convention did not feel well after being subjected to those trying to push their unaddictive hobby on the rest of us. For all the claims about marijuana not being addictive, those folks sure spent a lot of hours each day smoking this stuff. Sandy Dalton, Boise, Idaho.
Well, Ms. Dalton, imagine my surprise to hear about, quote, thick marijuana smoke in the lobby, elevators, area around the hotel, and in our room, end quote. As outreach coordinator for Normal, I had visited all of those areas frequently throughout the three-day conference, and never once did I catch anyone smoking marijuana in the lobby, elevator, or in your room. There was smoking outside, on the windy patio area, for medical marijuana patients, who aren't allowed to use their medicine in their own hotel rooms, unlike, say, you and your mother. Other folks who had traveled from less tolerant places in America, like Boise, Idaho, where you can get 6 months in jail for merely being high, availed themselves of an outdoor doobie as an act of personal liberation that harmed nobody. I think what you're complaining about, Ms. Dalton, is marijuana smell. I won't deny that the lobby, elevators, and some hallways would smell like people who had been smoking marijuana, though the hotel's ubiquitous oil candles probably added to the discomfort more than it helped. But guess what? Sometimes freedom is smelly. Sometimes I have to sit on an airplane on flights back to Boise next to an old woman who stinks of perfume. Sometimes I have to get into an elevator and ride with businessmen who reek of tobacco smoking. Sometimes I have to stay in hotel rooms on floors where young men are drinking and partying until 3 a.m. and the smell of stale beer permeates my room. Sometimes I walk the streets of a big city and I smell all sorts of unpleasant things. Normal is more than respectful of non-smokers' rights, but not to the point where we're going to Febreze ourselves before going out in public because you don't like the smell of marijuana, Ms. Dalton. The hotel had 20 rooms that our medical patients had requested, and they smoked marijuana within them. If that smell wafted toward your room, I'm sorry, but that could just as well have been a tobacco smoker in that smoking room. And for the record, every bellman, housekeeper, banquet staff, engineer, dishwasher, front desk, and cook that I interacted with were either very happy to be working with us or upset that they were at work and could not join us. Now, that would have been the end of it, if not for an opinion column today by John Diaz in the Chronicle.
Three letters to the editor on Tuesday, in a package headlined, Tales of Life in the City, raised questions about the competence and attentiveness of the San Francisco Police Department. One writer, a visitor from Chicago, detailed his frustration in trying to retrieve his stolen belongings. A city resident bemoaned the difficulty of finding a shopping cart at a grocery store, while homeless people seemed to steal them with impunity. A tourist from Boise, Idaho, described how her stay at the Grand Hyatt Hotel seemed like a smoke-filled scene from a Cheech and Chong movie.
No, that would have been my suite. Once again, there may have been marijuana smell, but there was definitely not marijuana smoke all through the Grand Hyatt.
Sandy Dalton of Boise, Idaho, took her 73-year-old mother to San Francisco to see the musical South Pacific. She booked a non-smoking room at the Grand Hyatt, but when she arrived, the entire hotel seemed to be engulfed by the distinct scent of marijuana. Dalton's visit coincided with the 38th Annual Conference of Normal, a group that advocates the legalization of marijuana. It seems that many of the conference attendees were lighting up as if their goal had already been achieved.
Yes, because, in fact, it has been. Many of the conference attendees are medical marijuana patients, and their goal of legal use has been achieved.
Dalton and her mother rolled wet towels under the door to stop the secondhand smoke, but it did little good. The smoke was so pervasive that her mother felt ill. Quote, "There were a couple of guys who rode up the elevator with us at the Grand Hyatt during the Marijuana Love Fest," she said. "One of them mentioned that he was on probation and was worried that he wouldn't pass a drug test, given that the elevator was honestly thick with pot smoke," end quote.
Again, with the image of the hot-boxed elevator, as if the doors open and it looks like Spicoli's van from Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, gnarly!
What are you people? On dope?
Come on, people. You know when you use honestly to preface a statement, it is usually an exaggeration? Nobody is going to fail any urine screens because they rode in an elevator that smelled like marijuana.
The hotel offered an apology and a free breakfast. It did not, apparently, ask for law enforcement's help in controlling the party. San Francisco Police Chief George Gascon acknowledge that marijuana smoking is a, quote, low-grade event, end quote, on the scale of police priorities, as it should be. But if officers had been called, they would have started with warnings to smokers who did not have medical marijuana cards.
And wouldn't that have been fun to sort out, with all the out-of-state, but legal in their state, medical patients, and all the in-state, perfectly legal medical patients in attendance, flanked by 24 or so of the top marijuana criminal defense attorneys in the country. Yes, that would have been a compelling use of police resources.
The Grand Hyatt should not have been surprised that a normal event turned into an abnormal smoke-a-thon. It owes Sandy Dalton and other non-smoking guests more than a free breakfast and an apology. They should get refunds for their exposure to the inconsiderate side of San Francisco.
Okay, then, let me make a complaint. On Saturday night, as we began to assemble for the bus to take us to a party, the streets were completely shut down by a mass bicycle protest called Critical Mass. Our bus sat there at the intersection, unable to pick us up for 20 minutes because of people, some of them naked, and a few of them smelly, clogging the streets. So imagine my surprise when this inconsiderate side of San Francisco was actually being assisted by the San Francisco police. There they were, stopping traffic to ensure that none of these naked bike riders or anyone in traffic would be harmed. I'm joking, of course. I thought the mass bike ride was fantastic. But there is an activity that inconvenienced far more people than the smell of marijuana in one hotel. More violations of the law and threats to public safety occurred during that bike ride than at the entire 3-day normal conference. Why I give my 9-year-old medical marijuana for autism. In a 2-part article called Why I Give My 9-Year-Old Pot, writer and parent Marie Myung-ok Lee talks about using cannabis as a therapy to treat her 9-year-old son's pain, irritable bowel, and other effects from his autism. You should really read part one and part two in full. I've got links to them up at the Stash at stash.normal.org. But I will just give you some snippets of the positive responses this little boy named Jay has received from medical marijuana. My son Jay has autism. He also had two serious surgeries for a spinal cord tumor and has an inflammatory bowel condition, all of which may be causing him pain, if he could tell us. We made the cookies with the marijuana olive oil, starting Jay off with half a small cookie, eaten after dinner. Jay normally goes to bed around 7:30 p.m. By 6:30, he declared he was tired and conked out. We checked on him hourly. As we anxiously peeked in, half expecting some red-eyed ogre from Reefer Madness to come leaping out at us, we saw instead that he was sleeping peacefully. Usually, his sleep is shallow and restless. Jay also woke up happy. Since we started him on his special tea, Jay's little face, which is sometimes a mask of pain, has softened. He smiles more. My mother remarked that Jay seems calmer. As we were preparing for a trip to the park, Jay disappeared and we wondered if he was going to throw one of his tantrums. Instead, he returned with Grandma's shoes, laying them in front of her, even carefully adjusting them so that they were parallel and easy to step into. He looked into her face and smiled. Pre-pot, Jay ate things that weren't food. There's a name for this, pica. His pica becomes so uncontrollable that we couldn't let him sleep with a pajama top. It would be gone by morning. Or a pillow. Ditto the case and the stuffing. The worst part was watching him scream in pain on the toilet when what went in had to come out. I had nightmares about long threads knotting in digestive organs. Almost immediately after we started the cannabis, the pica stopped. Just stopped. Jay now sleeps with his organic woolen cotton hypoallergenic temptingly chewable comforter. He pulls it up to his chin at night and declares, "I'm cozy." Next, we started seeing changes in Jay's school reports. At one parent meeting in August, his teacher excitedly presented his June-July aggression chart. An aggression is defined as any attempt or instance of hitting, kicking, biting, or pinching another person. For the past year, he'd consistently had 30 to 50 aggressions in a school day, with a one-time high of 300. The charts for June through July, by contrast, showed he was actually having days, sometimes one after another, with zero aggressions. When Jay was in his dark phase, we spent our time out of sight, out of mind, inside our house with a screeching, violent, food and dish-flinging Jay. The sounds were contained by double-paned windows, when they weren't broken. Now within our family, we've reached a lovely homeostasis. Household goods unbroken, our arms and Jay's face unscratched. Fortunately for Marie, she lives in Rhode Island, one of the 13 states that allow parents to use this non-toxic, therapeutically active herb for their severely ill child. Marie also tells of her life with Jay prior to cannabis and how doctors were quick to prescribe Risperdal, Thorazine for kids, as she calls it, a drug that has never been studied for long-term safety in children and has a list of nasty side effects. Almost 250,000 children under age 12 were prescribed Risperdal last year, and from 2000 to 2004, 45 children died from it, and five other popular atypical antipsychotics. Fortunately for Jay, his mother and his doctor chose a much safer and more effective alternative in cannabis. Marijuana licensing in New Mexico failing to meet patient needs. From the New York Times, Santa Fe, New Mexico. New Mexico's new medical marijuana law was intended to provide safe, above-board access to the drug for hundreds of residents with chronic pain and other debilitating conditions. By licensing nonprofit distributors, New Mexico hoped to improve upon the free-for-all distribution systems in some states, like California and Colorado, where hundreds of for-profit dispensaries have sprung up with virtually no state oversight. But even in New Mexico, the process, from procuring the starter seed in Amsterdam via a middleman to home delivery by a former Marine, is not for the faint of heart. Those engaged in the experiment here never know if they will be arrested because growing, selling, and using marijuana remain illegal under federal law, and robbery is always a fear. Among New Mexican patients, demand has been great. In the 2 months since the Santa Fe Institute for Natural Medicine began dispensing marijuana, it has signed up about 400 clients, said Robert Pack, a patient on its board of directors who uses the drug to curb the side effects of epilepsy medication. Eager patients depleted the initial supply, and the organization had to hurry to produce more marijuana this month because weeks of rain hampered the drying and curing phase. For the Santa Fe Institute, the production process has been nerve-wracking. The marijuana plants, no more than 95 at a time under state regulations, are grown in a windowless rural building with steel doors, a motion detector, and, to keep the plant's pungent odor indoors, carbon filters. Despite a high-tech alarm system and the hidden location, the Institute's grower, who insisted on anonymity, said he constantly feared being robbed. Delivering the marijuana can also be fraught with anxiety. The Department of Homeland Security informed the group that the former Marine who serves as courier could be prosecuted if stopped at any of several border protection checkpoints in southern New Mexico, where many clients live. The Institute's chief said, quote, "Homeland Security made it clear, clear, clear. Their directive is, you got it, we confiscate it," end quote. Once again, we see that no matter how a state tries to create a system of marijuana distribution for legal medical patients, the federal prohibition will create hazards of prosecution and confiscation that hinder the effort. These border protection checkpoints are often nowhere near the actual border. Supreme Court decisions allow these federal agencies to operate within 100 miles of the border in the effort to secure the homeland. Rarely do these efforts do anything to protect us from terrorists or illegal immigrants. Rather, more often than not, the federal government uses this constitutional loophole to continue its war on marijuana users. Until marijuana is legal for the vast majority who use it non-medically, medical users will always face exorbitant pricing, inadequate supply, and fear of robbery by bad guys or arrest by good guys.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling while promoting the message of reform. To donate your song for possible use on the stash, enter it in the next Marijuana Music Awards contest today. Tam from Marijuana Music Awards is going to be off this site for a month as she prepares for the 2010 Marijuana Music Awards. During this time, Cannabis Carrie and I are going to scour our vaults for the great Toker tunes for the next few weeks. I finally got a chance to rip the CDs that the Dirtball had given me. He's my Oregon homie from the central part of the state near Bend. I loved his tunes Mushroom Cloud and Moonshine Rhyme, which I've played on previous stashes. Today's tune comes from his 2006 release, Raptilian, and the song I'm playing for you is Hate Bait. Considering some of the hate I've been getting as of late, and not from you, dear stashers, but from that cold, hard world out there, it does feel a bit cathartic. You can check out more on The Dirtball at myspace.com/thedirtball. This is The Dirtball with Hate Bait.
Point. Even a joint can't bring me back around. I put up flyers all over town, they get ripped down. A jealousy disease is infecting my town. I'm hate bait, better sharpen your hooks. Why am I here when you be giving me looks?
What's that?
Your backstab, a crap crab up in the grind. I'm feeling fine, doing mine.
What?
I'm hate bait, better sharpen your hooks. Why am I here when you be giving me looks?
What's that?
Your backstab, a crap crab up in the grind. I'm feeling fine, doing mine.
Dangerous, I'm sticking it up like Donkey Kong. Bad to bone, be moving on. Out of my way while a carpet bone. You got a problem with these beats I'm rapping on. And strapping on like a motherfucking arsenal, my word be born. Yeah, I've seen it all before. I've seen it on the floor. Can't trust nobody with the minimum amounts of hate. It's rapping law. Look it up, page 8, number 91. It says right here that hate are gonna be everywhere under the sun. And no, it ain't fun. I'm tired of little punks bashing. Little punks thrashing. Little punk, get up off my passion. Artists in action, you be a fraction of what I am. Use a fucking distraction. So give me a bottle of the best of booze. I know that I best choose the better path. They gonna feel my wrath, but I best not move forward too fast. I'm gonna get me some revenge while I put them on blast.
I'm hate bait, better sharpen your hooks. Why am I here when you be giving me looks? Your backstab, a crack crab up in the grind. I'm feeling fine, doing mine. I'm hate bait, better sharpen your hooks. Why am I here when you be giving me looks? Your backstab, a crack crab up in the grind. I'm feeling fine, doing mine.
It's hate bait. They'd love me if they could,
yep.
But I guess they catch us cause they ain't from my hood.
Nah.
I'd stab you if I could, but I just can't. I'm killing you for sure without a shank. Now why the fuck they run when they hear the gun? I guess they not knowing where I'm coming from. D-ball, D-ball, you safe up in this mix. Cause me and my clique, we love to run tricks. And flip on parks, they love to talk shit. Beef gets out of quick, fool, I'm fully equipped. Patient as fuck, just waiting for another hit. No internet MCs, y'all get the lead. Shit. Smash, bash, boom, we clear the room. On any little bitch, boy, faggots, we bring the doom. To all your motherfuckers, this beat the rebirth. Claiming the biggest catch, every hater on earth.
Got
I'm hate bait, better sharpen your hooks.
Come on.
Why am I here when you be giving me looks? Your backstab, a crack crab up in the grind. I'm feeling fine, doing mine.
What?
I'm hate bait, better sharpen your hooks.
Come on.
Why am I here when you be giving me looks? Your backstab, a crack crab up in the grind. I'm feeling fine, doing mine.
What?
I'm hate bait, better sharpen your hooks.
Come on.
Why am I here when you be giving me looks? Your backstab, a crack crab up in the grind. I'm feeling fine, doing mine.
What?
I'm hate bait, better sharpen your hooks.
Come on.
Why am I here when you be giving me looks? Your backstab, a crack crab up in the grind. I'm feeling fine, doing mine.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, The A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z guide to stoner language and life at Amazon.com or visit potculturebook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
In the marijuana law reform movement, the cannabis community is represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the consumers who use and cultivate cannabis, and the defense attorneys who represent these consumers. These are their stories. It's time for Reforming Marijuana Laws with the Normal Legal Committee. With over 350 practicing attorneys, the NLC is a major force in the fight against marijuana prohibition. These top-notch criminal defense lawyers regularly defend individuals charged with marijuana offenses, and they frequently provide pro bono assistance in important or unusual cases which may set favorable legal precedent or otherwise impact public policy. To join the Normal Legal Committee as an attorney or to find a lawyer for your cannabis defense, visit the Find a Lawyer link at norml.org.
Bring you some more audio from the Normal National Conference that took place at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in San Francisco, September 24th through 26th. The 24th, Thursday, was a medical cannabis-only day, and it was an extremely well-attended session. In the afternoon, we had a panel called Larger Patient Cooperatives and Dispensaries, a.k.a. Cannabusinesses, and the panelists in this discussion read like a who's who of marijuana law reform lawyers, including Matt Abel, James Anthony, Warren Edson, Joe Elford, Matthew Cumin, John Lucy IV, and our moderator, William Panzer, the co-author of Prop 215 and a member of the Normal Board of Directors. We join the first 15 minutes of this panel, and for the entire 1 hour 45 minute panel, you can get that at our special events feed at stash.normal.org. Here's William Panzer.
This morning we talked about medical cannabis law in California as it applies to patients, caregivers, and small groups, what we call collectives. This afternoon we're going to be talking to you about larger associations of patients, commonly called clubs or dispensaries, brick-and-mortar establishments that distribute cannabis. Many of them have 500, 1,000, 2,000 or more members. Now, what makes a dispensary legal? I said it this morning. I'll say it again. I will say it until they change the law. There's only two ways that you can legally distribute cannabis from one human being to another, from the caregiver to the patient. That doesn't work with the dispensary. The only other way is among the association of patients. So what makes a dispensary legal is that it's set up as an association of patients, either as a collective or a cooperative. And I want to just briefly go over again the obtaining the medicine, talk to you this morning. I don't want to repeat it regarding Jerry Brown saying you have to cultivate your own. I don't believe that's true. But there's something else. Many dispensaries that I see believe that they're in compliance where they get the medicine from members. The member will grow it, bring it in, and say, hey, I grew 3 pounds, I'll sell it to you for $3,000 a pound, etc. Now, there's no definitive answer to this, and there may be some disagreement among me and other lawyers, but in my opinion, that is not a lawful model. Because that is, while the person who's growing is a member of the collective, of the dispensing cooperative, they are bringing in their own cannabis and selling it. I don't believe that that's legal. I think that the way to set up legally, because the statute says patients and caregivers associating collectively or cooperatively to cultivate, the cultivation project has to be a jointly owned cultivation project, not owned by the individual member. It's owned by everybody. Now, the member can receive money to pay them back for their cost, their out-of-pocket cost in cultivating, and they can receive payment because they're doing a job for the collective. They're tending the plants that belong to everybody, and they can receive payment for that. Now, conceptually, that's different from their tending their own plants and selling them to the collective. Here's an illustration of the difference. Let's say Henry Wykowski, who you're going to hear from in a little bit, is sitting right here. Let's say Henry and I are both members of a patient association that has a storefront dispensary, and we both are cultivators for the association. Now, under the situation that exists in most places, let's say Henry grows 10 pounds and I grow 5 pounds. Henry comes in, he'll get $30,000 at $3,000 a pound for his 10 pounds. I get $15,000 at $3,000 a pound for my 5 pounds. I don't believe that's legal. What I believe is lawful would be, again, Henry and I grow, and he gets paid for his out-of-pockets, I get paid for my out-of-pocket expenses. He gets paid for his hourly, I get paid for my hourly. If we have the same amount of hours, the same amount of time, he's a better grower than I am, he gets 10 pounds, I get 5. We get the same amount of money. The fact that he grows more just means that it brings down the total price for everybody in the collective because it belonged to them from the very moment it came out of the ground.
It's right here.
Right, now we're going to go. Well, you know, I mean, it's people want to make money at this, and I understand that. I don't begrudge you making the money. I'm just here to tell you what's legal and what isn't legal. All right, now, what is a cooperative? The word's been thrown around. Lots of people call themselves cooperatives, but what really is it? Our next speaker is an attorney here in San Francisco whose practice specializes in business law and civil rights law. He has worked with many, many, many patient associations. He's done a lot of great work. He, along with Henry Wykowski and myself, Mac Heumann, the three of us represented a dispensary called CHAMP. CHAMP was the largest dispensing, well, they were run actually on a patient caregiver model, it was back in the beginning. They were the largest dispensary in San Francisco. CHAMP was a model dispensary. CHAMP voluntarily shut down back in 2002 when Ed Rosenthal was busted. When we got discovery in Ed's case, the DEA, by mistake, left in some investigation reports regarding surveillance of CHAMP, an investigation of CHAMP. CHAMP, everyone who worked there was a patient, very ill people, and they didn't want to put their workers through getting raided, through getting arrested, et cetera, and CHAMP decided to shut down, but they left the corporation open. A few years ago, the IRS came by and said, hey, we looked at your tax returns, because CHAMP filed tax returns, and they said that we're denying your deductions, and you owe $400,000 in taxes. Henry and Matt and I challenged that, and we argued that the business expenses that were paid for non-cannabis-related services, such as social services for patients, massage therapist there, a nurse there, they had Friday and Saturday night dinners, a whole panoply of patient services. And we argued those we should be able to deduct. The IRS argued it was like a glass of water with a drop of ink. The drop of ink pollutes the entire glass of water. We said, no, you can differentiate between cannabis expenses and non-cannabis related expenses. We had a trial. The judge, we briefed it. The judge ruled in our favor. And we got that tax bill down from $400,000 to a shade under $5,000. And this has implications for all collectives out there, all dispensaries out there. So to talk to you about what are the elements of a cooperative, talk about things like salaries, expenses, costs, how the money works. I don't know any attorney in California that understands this stuff better than Matt Heumann.
Thanks, Billy. And before I go any further, just Mike Aldrich, would you just please stand up and take a bow? Mike ran CHAMP. This is the guy that had the courage and the charisma to put together an organization that had 50% AIDS and cancer patients, free hot lunches. I mean, I think many of you out in the audience I've talked to, I've sent the CHAMP decision. It's a wonderful decision. It's easy to read. I recommend everyone get it and look at it. As always, as well, I'm always happy to be in the comfortable zone of my fellow attorneys. Billy this morning was talking about how he'd want Omar and Xenia to represent him. If anything ever happened to me, I'd want Billy to take care of me. So I'll get you that retainer later this afternoon. And also, because I have to run out and get my 10-year-old daughter probably before the end of the session, I'm going to leave Billy with some business cards. So anyone who wants to email me a question, I will email you back with whatever answer I can come up with. So before I forget. Now, everybody's jumping up and down and talking about cooperatives, collectives, and it gets even sort of, people get a little upset. No, you should have a collective. No, you should have a cooperative. And the truth is that there's really no difference. So what are we talking about here? Well, we're talking about my senior year of college when seven of us rented a house and shared expenses, rent, cooked food together. We're talking about Sun-Kissed Oranges, the largest agricultural cooperative, probably this side of the Mississippi. It's a farmer cooperative, not a consumer cooperative or a consumer collective. We're talking about some of the most important financial institutions in America, namely credit unions, which actually take our money, invest in it, and then reinvest in our communities. We're talking about some of the largest, most successful food cooperatives in the United States. We're talking about REI. Anyone buy camping equipment from REI? One of the largest consumer cooperatives in the United States. And what links all of these entities, all of these businesses? Well, they are run by and for their members for their benefit. They're not run for shareholders who live in other communities. They are not run for the benefit of the management, although the management, and we'll get there, gets to make a nice salary for taking care of such a complex business organization. What's beautiful about the cooperatives, and by the way, we have a tradition in the United States going back to the 1700s when striking shoemakers in the city of Philadelphia decided that if they were going to be locked out by their cheap-ass employer, they might as well just set up their own little shoemaking factory. So we have a nice independent streak here with cooperatives. We have something very special because when you set up a cooperative or a collective, I don't care what we call these things, it's the same principle. It's set up by the members. It's run for the members. If you set one up in your community, you're going to take the money in and you're going to send it back out in the community. I have clients that are contemplating setting up a credit union within their cooperative so that they can make loans to their members so that their members can set up small businesses. What could we do with business organizations that are run for us? What could we do with the money? Could we use it to help the county pay for the upkeep of the ball fields for the kids because the county ran out of money? Yes, we're doing that in California. Can we support local alternative healers, nutrition counselors, massage therapists, chiropractors, acupuncturists? Can we do that by coming up with contracts with them to provide services for ourselves as patients, as members of our cooperative? Of course we can, and we do that all over the state. Cooperatives are just like any other corporation in some regards. We get protection if our cooperative, if our cooperative drivers are driving around on cooperative business and get into a car accident, and our cooperative is sued, no one individual within the cooperative has to take or has to stand trial. It's the cooperative's responsibility, and hopefully it has insurance. And I saw on the table, I don't know who's in there, but a bunch of insurance companies now stepping up, ready to insure you against not only the common losses, but as I understand it from, I think Warren was telling me, that they're actually starting to contemplate insuring the crops and the products in the stores. So I don't know how, that's all pretty close. The way I always talk about this industry, everything's changing every 3 to 6 months, so things keep changing constantly. So the cooperative has a corporate form. It's got a board of directors. How many in here are on the board of directors of a cooperative? Stand up proud. There you are. Stand up, everyone. These are the leaders in the community that run the cooperatives in their communities. Thank you. They are in charge. They're going to take the heat. They set direction. And they hire the officers. Some of you may have seen corporate forms. And then the officers run the day-to-day. And then you have, of course, the members, for whose benefit all of the cooperative's operations function. It's not too complicated, and luckily California makes it even easier, because in the typical cooperative, every time you shop, they're supposed to keep track, like at REI or the Davis. Anyone ever been to the Davis Food Cooperative in Davis, California? You walk in, it looks like a supermarket, but it's a cooperative. You got to go in and give your member number before you go check out at the cash register. So what happens? At the end of the year in a regular cooperative, you're supposed to get any money the cooperative makes, surplus they call it, supposed to be given back to the members. Well, California has a neat little statute. It says you can do that, or you can actually just use the surplus in your cooperative for the general welfare of your patient members. It's beautiful. You don't have to do terribly onerous bookkeeping requirements, although I'm going to be talking in a minute about some of the bookkeeping issues and some folks that I've been identifying in the last few years to try to help everyone, because God knows you need some good professionals on keeping track of the money, because that's what law enforcement's really interested in, seeing where all the money is going. Is that right, Bill? See? If Bill says it's right, then it's right. So, excuse me.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
Leave you today with a reminder about my upcoming trip on October 23rd and 24th to be a panelist at the Cypress Hill Smokeout at the San Manuel Amphitheater in San Bernardino, California. It's a two-day festival featuring exclusive live performances from Slipknot, Deftones, Cypress Hill, and the reformed Sublime. Also, Method Man and Red Man, Bad Brains, Pennywise, and other groups will be there, and plenty of panels and panelists to give you all the growing truth about cannabis. Check it out at guerrillaunion.com/smokeout. That's GUERILLA union.com/smokeout. Also coming up on tomorrow's Daily Audio Stash, we've got an exclusive interview with Keith Stropp, the founder of Normal, and Dr. Lester Grinspoon as they prepare their testimony in Massachusetts court over the constitutionality of banning cannabis. Check it out tomorrow, and until next time,
take care of each other, tokers.